You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, the fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with RAFA in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam. Stage 19, today we're in Tignes.
To all the teams, a very important message. Due to very bad weather conditions that come to 112, a heavy hail, we are forced to stop the stage. We are forced to stop the stage. The times will be taken at the top of the Col de l'Isran. All times have been taken at the top of the Col de l'Isran. We are going to stop the stage. Please let your riders know. Merci de prévenir vos coureurs. Prévenir vos coureurs.
Hi, it's Simon the photographer here. Well, that is one of the strangest days I've ever had at the Tour. I've plonked myself on the Col de l'Isran for the second from last climb of the day, just hoping to see a bit of interesting action, but it's got more interesting than I could ever have imagined, really. We've got I'm stood here now, and there's Matt White trying to sell other teams' bikes. There's Dylan Groenewegen just eating a chocolate bar. There's a couple of other riders. I'm not sure who they are, but they're just at the kiosk now, a small little kiosk on the top here, buying a chocolate bars. Spirits are high, but everyone looks rather confused by what's going on.
Where are we, Francois?
Well, we're in Tignes, you know, but we're not where the finish line was. We're a little bit further down towards the dam, where you know where the race was supposed to be going over the dam, but it never happened.
Well, we were played in there, weren't we, with an excerpt of the instructions given over Radio Tour by Seb Piquet, and then we heard a dispatch from our friend Simon, the photographer. I mean, what a strange day, the strangest day, hasn't it been?
It's been the strangest day since we saw Chris Froome running up Mont Ventoux a couple of years ago. I mean, these things do seem to happen in the Tour de France. But today was quite remarkable, just how quickly the race organisers reacted to avert what could have been a pretty nasty situation with the riders descending towards a landslide and a hailstorm which had deposited, well, basically ice on the road.
Well, it was strange because I was not with you guys today. I was in a Skoda car ahead of the race, and we were not far ahead of the peloton. We just stopped for a lovely picnic lunch by the side of the road. And it was, the weather was fine.
You'd been over the place where the mudslide took place, or
no. So this was on the descent of the Isaral.
Oh yeah.
And it was fine. The weather was nice. No hint of what was to come at all. We got back in the car. We were watching the race on our phones, and we were about 15-20 minutes ahead of the race only, and suddenly these hailstones began falling on the car. And the noise, well, let's hear what it sounded like now. It was unbelievable, to the point where I actually worried that the car wouldn't be strong enough to withstand it. And the lady beside me, Deb from Skoda, told me that they've had cars seriously damaged by hailstones before, and in some parts of the world you need hailstone insurance, and she'd never experienced anything like it. The road quickly became an ice rink. The cars that weren't four-wheel drive cars had to pull in at the side of the road. Ours was, but Tim Harris, who was driving, slammed on the brakes from time to time, and we skidded. And we realised within a couple of minutes that the race would have to be stopped. There was absolutely no way the riders could ride down off the hill into this.
Yeah.
We then, a few minutes later, came up to the landslide, and that had completely blocked the road. As we were standing watching it and taking pictures, it became bigger, and we realized the ground was moving, and we didn't know how much of the mountain was going to slide down in front of us. So we beat a hasty retreat and then heard that the race had been stopped. But it wasn't a decision that had to be made. There was no choice at all. Can we have the tale of the attack, please, Lionel?
Well, it's truncated somewhat, like the stage itself. Well, Francois and I drove up to Tignes in very, very heavy rain, and feeling pretty sorry for the spectators who were walking up braving the conditions on the basis that the trade-off was they'd at least get to see the Tour de France, and of course they didn't. Fortunately, there were some of the sort of open tunnels where the snow kind of to stop the snow slipping onto the roads for them to shelter under. Yeah, that was the place to be.
They were flocking at those places like I don't know, the site was pretty amazing. I mean, all these people cramming all together under those I don't know what to call them, not bridge, but a kind of shelters. Yeah, it was very impressive.
So we knew the weather forecast was bad for this afternoon. We didn't really anticipate the stage having to be cancelled in the way that it was, but as we were arriving at Teen, the big story was that Thibaut Pinot, Groupama FDJ's rider, lying fifth overall this morning, had pulled out of the race in tears with a knee injury, apparently sustained during the stage to gap when he banged it on his handlebar. So he's obviously been carrying this for a few days. Probably explains entirely why he wasn't looking so lively yesterday. But that already feels now like the oldest story in the world, doesn't it? Because so much drama then unfolded across the rest of the afternoon. The stage was, of course, supposed to go from Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne to Tien, but it was cut short as the leaders descended the Col de l'Isaron. A very heavy hailstorm, as Richard says, and a landslide meant that it was impossible for the race to continue. And, as we heard from Seb Piquet delivering the news to the team cars, the decision was made quickly and decisively to stop the stage and take the times on the Isaron. And by making that announcement, probably that diverted a lot of arguments on the road, which would have put the riders in danger. I think that as I'm kind of digesting the way things have unfolded this afternoon, it makes more and more sense to me what they did. So first to the top of the Isaron was Egan Bernal of Team Ineos. And crucially, he was 2 minutes and seven ahead of Julian Alaphilippe, the yellow jersey, who had been dropped earlier on. And so with the 8 seconds bonus as well for reaching the top of the Isaron first, Bernal is now 48 seconds ahead of Alaphilippe overall. Geraint Thomas, Bernal's teammate, of course, is at 1:16. Stephen Kruijswijk of Jumbo-Visma is at 1:28. And Emmanuel Buchmann moves up to fifth place because of Pinot's withdrawal. So Bernal becomes the third Colombian to wear the yellow jersey after Victor Hugo Peña and Fernando Gaviria. And he's now surely the hot favourite to win this Tour. But as we saw today, anything could happen tomorrow.
Well, Stop Press and inserted into the podcast after we'd finished recording is the news that stage 20 has been cut short. There will be no Corme de Rosaline climb, and the penultimate stage of the Tour will be just 59 kilometres because of the bad weather forecast and the threat of landslides.
The fastest closing in a world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and Watch with Rafa in 2019 as a partner EF Education First and Canyon Charam.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor Rafa for supporting us. And we ran the poll, I think it went live this morning, to find the final week's Pedlar de Charme. Lots of strong nominations, but the outstanding favourite and runaway leader at the moment is Julian Alaphilippe, and I suspect he will be our Pedlar de Charme. More than ample compensation for him, I would have thought, after losing a yellow jersey. We're actually in the hotel at the moment where De Koenig and Quickstep are staying, and I was separated from you guys today. As I said, I was dropped here at the bottom of the final climb up to the finish, and as I was trying to find somewhere to shelter myself, the De Koenig and Quickstep team cars appeared, and a crowd kind of blocked the road, and the cars
stopped. And Julian Philippe gave you his yellow jersey?
Well, no, yeah, not quite. But Alaphilippe was in one of the cars, and he climbed out the sunroof and was conducting a sort of orchestra of people singing his name. And, he seemed very chirpy and in good humour. The official word from the team is that he's very disappointed. But it's a big question, isn't it? What did today do to the race? Would Alaphilippe have gained a bit of time on the descent and maybe not lost much time? Would he have lost more time? We just don't know.
Yeah, we're forced to. I mean, I know it's a kind of not wishful thinking, but yeah, wishful reporting of what could have happened, but you can't help asking yourself what would have happened had the stage gone all the way, and who are finally the winners and the losers of the day because of the mudslide and the weather conditions. My take on it, is that there's a number of winners, a number of losers, and Julian Alaphilippe is, in a way, in my opinion, one of the winners of the day. Okay, he lost the yellow jersey, he's now 48 seconds down. But by the way, Egan Bernal was, right in towards the finish, my take on this is paradoxically ironically the one of the losers of the day, and we all also are among cycling fans, the lovers of the Tour de France, were among the losers as well, because he was going for a stage win that would have been memorable in the fashion of the Bobet copy of all, you know, going up on his own over the mountain and going to Tin. I really can't see how he could have been stopped, even if Simon Yates was.
He could have been stopped by the ice on the road.
That's
get
right.
The ice tires
but
on.
You know, apart from that, so he was going for a performance that would have been memorable, and in the end, I mean, he is maybe going to become the first Colombian to win the Tour, and it's huge. But it could have been even more enormous had the race gone all the way. Other winner, in my opinion, Romain Bardet, because he was in trouble with his polka dot jersey on and managed to keep it because the stage was stopped, and at the stage had gone all the way, Romain Bardet would probably have lost his polka dot jersey. And any other winners and losers,
well,
in your opinion?
It's a shame. And Bernal sort of reversed into the yellow jersey, didn't he? He was presented with, there was a presentation, there were a lot of Colombians there to see that, but not the moment that, you know, that he would have dreamed of, winning a stage and being presented with the jersey.
No, but he does still have tomorrow.
You
know, and maybe he will want to go out and really prove that he is the winner of this tour. I mean, when we were rushing around up in Tien trying to find out what had happened, trying to digest all of the different information, because, you know, the way it unfolded this afternoon was really pretty chaotic. I mean, French TV announced that the times would be taken on the top of the Isérin, and I was thinking, well, what's the precedent for that? Where's the UCI rule for this? I mean, there isn't really one. It was only when I heard Seb Piquet, the race voice of Radio Tour, you know, delivering the result of the tour, you know, that judgment has to be final, because that is what all of the competitors would have been told at the crucial time. And now I kind of understand exactly why that decision was made, the way it was made, for the safety of the riders. He couldn't have them plummeting down. You couldn't have any kind of confusion or discussion about, no, we're racing, forget that. The race had to be stopped, and they had to not only stop the race, but also say to everyone, this is what this now means. We are going to take the time back. Although it seems strange,
if you remember,
to me,
in the Giro in 2014, the race was neutralized, and that did not help anything, because it created just confusion. That wasn't an option here anyway.
But that was when Quintana.
No, you couldn't neutralize in this case, you know, because the course was blocked.
Not at all. But when we were not in possession of all of those facts, that, you know, up at the top at Tien, and hadn't seen all the pictures and the footage of Dagoto Lauritsen,
he must have had better phone than me, because I was standing beside him and he got his footage up quicker than I did, which was really annoying.
They are a TV crew, Rich.
True,
I mean, to be fair. I scurried up to the Team Ineos hotel, and a few of us had a chat with Dave Brailsford, and let's hear what he had to say first of all.
Well, I think if you look at the rules, I think they can cancel and give the times at a certain point. They can, you know, there's quite a variety of choices that they can make. And I think when you look at the race in its entirety, our kind of assessment was that the Isérin was where it was going to. That 37 minutes of climbing up the Isérin was where it was going to be made. That was the race for us. We talked this morning about, guys, you've got 37 minutes to win this race, and that's it. And if you can, you know, put everything on the line, fortune favours the brave, etc., and we'd prefer to finish 100th and 100, well, maybe 102nd, 103rd, rather than a second and third. Let's go all in to try and win it. And that was the moment to do it. And we spoke this morning about, you know, Tim had done his had a look at the climb, Nico did his plans, and it was a hard start, you know, really, really hard start. But we didn't really want a scenario where it was quite easy, you know, Quickstep were riding with their guys, nice and easy to the foot of the Isérin, and off they go. That probably would have favoured Julian too much. So we needed a solid tempo all the way, really hard tempo all the way to the foot of the climb. And then our plan was for the guys to take it for the first 4K to ride what they do all the time, like really hard, you know, pace for to set it up. Comes to the 4th K, which just flattens out. They ride the 4th K, and it's all in.
But De Koenig are going to say that Alaphilippe
was going to get back on the descent and then stay with everyone on the climb to Tien. And Jumbo-Visma are going to say, well, Kruijswijk was in great shape. He was going to bridge up to Bernal. Until we see an official result, there's going to be some arguing about this, I guess.
Well, everybody's going to have a version of what if, aren't they? You know, at the end of the day, it didn't happen. And nobody will ever know. But what we do know, the facts are, Egan Bernal got the top of that hardest climb, you know, ahead of the others with a gap, and the others were chasing on, and Alaphilippe was dropped. And I don't, they're the facts. And from that point on, it's speculation, and everybody will speculate with a bias.
Well, the two things that were striking there were Dave Brailsford's certainty that how important the Iseran was going to be, that they planned to go hard on the Iseran, the 37-minute climb that was going to distance Alaphilippe and put Pino and everybody else in trouble, that all this was all thought out in advance, and very likely was. But what was really interesting was, you know, he deals in facts, doesn't he, rather than speculation, and the different,
very like yourself, Lionel.
The difference between the fact that Bernal was first to the top of the Iseran and the speculation that maybe Alaphilippe might have closed the gap, or maybe Kruijswijk could have, counter-attacked on the final climb to Tien. They are not facts, and I kind of do have a bit of sympathy with that. And you also can't penalise Bernal, who was first to the top of one of the most difficult climbs the Tour de France can serve. You can't then say to him at the end, sorry pal, that time gained doesn't matter. No. We're gonna have no result today. So I think that the decision that was made is not perfect. It doesn't suit everybody, but it's probably the fairest. And really, this was borne out by a very brief chat I had with Richard Pluger of Jumbo-Visma, who said it was the wisest and fairest decision.
And Tom Steels and Geert Van Bont as well here, Deceuninck Quick-Step directors, both said the same thing, that it's frustrating and it's disappointing for Alaphilippe, but they both acknowledged that it was the correct decision.
Yeah, you couldn't just cancel the stage. I mean, these guys had ridden, you know, hard mountains. They had attacked. Bernal had really been very impressive. And there was not a funny scene, but you know, he was so focused and motivated to go all the way, and you could tell he was out for one of the great feats of cycling in this couple of, well, I mean, after, you know, Chris from Giro's upheaval last year, but one of it might have been that spectacular. And when Simon Yates was with him, and we had the impression, we don't know what they said, but Simon Yates, you know, probably heard the news before and kind of told Bernal to stop, you know, this it's over, you know. And they had to choose a point where the stage had ended, and it would have been silly to say, you know, the two k's down from the Iseran. The logical thing was to say, let's stop it at the top.
But to pick up on your point from earlier, Francois, about Julian Alaphilippe, bittersweet for him, really, because, yeah, sure, he might have closed the gap on the descent, but my impression is he could have gone pop like a balloon touching a red hot radiator on the climb up to Tien, no, and lost 10 or 15 minutes.
Obviously.
So,
speculation.
And speculation, of course. Absolutely. But now he has a shot, a slim shot, but he has a shot at the podium or a top five, or, you know, clearly a very, very good result in the Tour de France. And so, yeah. The final thing about this hailstorm and landslide is that the Tour de France and all of the great races take place in fairly extreme places. It's not uncommon to have extreme weather in the Alps and the Pyrenees in the summer, terrible rainstorms. Landslides are a part of mountain life. And the races take the riders into these danger areas. And I think it just reminds us that what they're doing is not it's not an indoor FTP test, is it? Race in a real world.
If I can, you know, I know that from time to time I might sound like I'm, you know, kind of a spokesman for ASO, but because I've been working with these guys, I know what the way they operate. And actually, what makes them the leaders in the field of cycling, in the industry of cycling, is that they're actually daily mastering the unknown and the uncertainty. That there's no, it's a very flexible organization, and they're actually, the way they act is to make the the race is moving. It's not something fixed. It's always changing. Anything can happen, and that the ability to adapt quickly and to be flexible is essential to organizing, you know, this level of races. And well, let's say it. I mean, I'm saying it. ASO, with the experience they have of organizing this race, well, they know how to do that.
Who makes the call though? I'm not sure about this. Well, is it it's not a chief commissaire call, or is it a chief commissaire call once he gets information from the race organizers?
Well, that's something I've been actually trying to find out this afternoon. We'll ask a bit tomorrow. What I do know, I spent a bit of time looking at the rules and also at the extreme weather protocol, which, you know, covers exactly these kind of situations. And, well, there's no hard and fast rule because there's no hard and fast scenario.
The final decision, yeah, because I've seen that happen in a couple of minor races. The final decision belongs to the head of the commissaires, is the guy who says that the race is stopped. And it's also the head of the commissaires who says this is where the race, you know, the stage results are taken into account. But my take on it is that the suggestions of the solution and what should be done came from Thierry Gouvenou and Christian Prudhomme and the commissaires, you know, kind of, you know, just put their stamp on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no hard and fast rule about, you know, whether or not what should be done in these situations. We know, we've seen races where, you know, they might say we're going to finish with 20 kilometers to go, or the weather's so bad we're not going to do the finishing loop, so the finish line will be the first time through the finish before the circuit. These are fairly controllable scenarios, whereas today's scenario was really not controllable. There wasn't an option to say, right, well, we'll have the finish down on next to the petrol station after the descent or anything like this. You know, they had to really make that decision in really moments. And while I do think it's unsatisfactory to kind of backdate and say, okay, well, the winner was the guy who was first to the top and the times will be taken back, because let's not forget there were still riders riding up the Iseron who would have got the news that the stage was cancelled. Now, okay, they may already be 1.5, 2, 3 hours down overall, and so it doesn't really matter. But the integrity of a sporting event is that everybody races under the same conditions, and so. But I stress that we're talking about a pretty extreme set of circumstances. There really wasn't any other option other than to say the stage is cancelled and nothing counts. And I think that would have been unsatisfactory in another way. You have to respect and honour Bernal's performance today and say he was up the road winning the Tour de France at the point where, you know, it was clear that the weather was bad and the landslide had happened. And so, not perfect, but probably the only decision that they could have come to.
And to wrap up the winners and losers thing, I'm sure the sprinters and the guys at the back of the GC are very happy tonight because they made the time cut.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France.
Not the first time we've heard him.
He had
tonight.
A dramatic day, didn't he? But he's reminding us to tell you that this episode of the cycling podcast is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom. And, well, we both did an FTP test before the Tour de France. Richard, my numbers are closely guarded because there's a subject of a competition. We'll reveal my numbers on the Champs-Élysées.
In 2025.
No, on the Champs-Élysées. But, Richard, you undertook an FTP test as well, and that gives you an idea of just where you stand as a cyclist, your ability to sustain power over a set period of time and at set intensities. So let's hear how you got on.
Done. I'm finished, literally. 20-minute test. So, I covered 11.96 kilometres. I suppose that's the material. This is interesting. Balance this time, 49%, 51%. I think that's left leg 49, right leg 51. My pedalling efficiency score for my left leg, 55, and for my right leg, 31. Still don't know exactly what that means, but that sounds to me like I'm pedalling very efficiently, or quite more efficiently, with my left leg and not so much with my right leg, which is interesting. Average power 277, average cadence 997. I won't mention my power to weight ratio at this point, but I'll get a full report And there's a fascinating graph that you get as well, showing in squiggly lines exactly how effective and efficient your pedal stroke is. So really, really interesting. Lots of information, and some of it I don't understand yet. I'm going to find out exactly what that means when I talk to somebody from Watt Bike.
So, Richard.
So, Lionel.
So, Richard.
Interesting. Well, that I recorded that before I'd had the conversation with Barney Wainwright, who developed the pedaling efficiency, pedaling effectiveness score. And so I learned a lot more from talking to him about what that meant and, you know, what I might be able to do to improve the effectiveness on my right leg in particular. But yeah, fascinating and hard work. And you know, the information you get, as I said in that clip, is really interesting.
Not very powerful, though, are you? You know,
no match for Egan Bernal today, that's for sure. But well, I mean, I might give him Thibaut Pinot a run for his money, given that he was only riding on one leg.
Bless him.
Actually, that's not true. I wouldn't have.
No, you wouldn't have done. No, you wouldn't have done. Of course, you wouldn't have done. Anyway, if you would like to buy a Watt Bike Atom, go to wattbike.com/TCP100. And if you buy before the end of July, Watt Bike is offering £100 worth of Sigma Sport vouchers with every Watt Bike Atom purchase. So that's wattbike.com/TCP100 and use the code TCP100. That's TCP and the number 100, and you will get your Sigma Sport vouchers. Well, there's a very surreal atmosphere here at Tien, a lake just over there behind me, and just up the road is one of the hotels where the Katusha team are staying, certainly, and I can see the Katusha bus and a couple of their trucks, so they've certainly made it up here, but I'm not 100% certain that all the team buses have made it up before the roads were closed. So there are two separate issues. There's been a hailstorm and there's been a landslide, and well, as we now know, the race has been cancelled, the times will be taken on the top of the Isaran, and now the job is for all the riders to somehow get here.
What a disappointing day.
I know, it was like, we were so excited because we were watching it. Right, we were watching it in the car, but we're going to go and see it tomorrow, but it's just...
But did you get the worst of the weather here? Or?
Yeah, but we had a van, luckily we were all huddled inside a van, but it was still freezing cold in there.
So have you managed to see the tour at all so far?
This has been our first day. We've been riding some of the climbs around, and we did the Isaran yesterday, and we were very, very excited thinking about them coming down there, and then it didn't happen.
Well, a lot of chaos, isn't it? Yeah.
Carnage, absolute carnage. I don't know what's going to happen now. We've got to try and get home.
40-degree heat versus, what, 12 degrees, hail.
What's the situation as you understand it?
Well, I think it's pretty serious, actually, because, I mean, obviously, we've all seen the images of the landslide, and I saw some images of Dagot Lawrenson and the Norwegian guys all in the car there, and, you know, they were literally parked, and the road was disappearing in front of them, or the side of the mountain was coming down onto the road like a landslide in front of them, and literally fans were running away up the road, and they were pretty scared. That's no joke, is it? You know, it's a pretty serious situation, and I think when something like that happens, kind of racing pales into insignificance, because if everybody had ploughed down into that, it would have been a real crisis situation, I think. And of course, nobody knew at the time in the race what was going on, so it felt a little bit over the top. It felt a bit, you know, I'm sure for the immediate reaction of people, you could see the riders didn't understand it. But I've got to say, and I actually gave Jan Le Mounier a ring, actually, because they had the bravery, really, and the intelligence to make a very quick decision. Once they knew there was a problem up front, they made a very quick decision and stopped everything before we got into a very dangerous situation. So credit to them. I think it wasn't an easy decision to make, and they probably knew at the time they were going to get quite a lot of immediate kind of pushback, I guess, but they made absolutely the right decision for all of us.
Are you aware of the situation with the classification as it stands at the moment?
Yeah, I think Bernal is first and Alaphilippe still second, and a couple of seconds behind that it's Thomas and then Stephen. So yeah, there's still some chances tomorrow, but yeah, obviously today would have been a good chance for Stephen, and but it was a wise and a good decision of the organization.
They've taken the times on the top of the Isaran, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a good and wise decision.
You think that's okay? Yeah.
yeah, it's okay. It's, what else could I do? You know, you have to stop, and that's the best decision you could take, I guess.
We are from Atlanta.
I am from Puerto Rico.
When did you hear that the race had been cancelled?
5 minutes ago.
And that's that. That's what
very
happens.
Shocking. And then there's snow on the mountains now. There was not this morning.
So are you staying up here, or do you have to get down off the mountain here?
We have to get down, but we have a bus.
With all our bikes on the bus.
You know, though, the road's closed at the moment?
Yes, we do.
Well, at least you can get like a hot coffee or something to eat. Your day is not entirely ruined.
Yeah, it's 6:09 in front of the Groupama FDJ team bus, and Thibaut Pinot just made it back to the hotel, accompanied by Marc Madieu and one of his teammates, and he went straight into the hotel not by the main road, but by entrance, looking dejected, you can imagine, while walking slowly towards the hotel, looking at the ground, at the tarmac here. Quite a moving sight, to be honest. And I've just lived an unbelievable moment. Well, you know, that's kind of fate. I actually found myself in the lift with Thibaut and, you know, team press chief Marion Gachy. And he was there, you know, standing against the mirror, the rear mirror, the mirror of the lift, tears in his eyes. It was really, really, really a sad sight, and I didn't know what to do or say, and I said, I said I had no words. I said we were sad, and I said even the press, we were all dejected about what happened. He said thanks. It was, yeah, very moving and, well, quite an embarrassing moment, but there you are. I mean, yeah, a great, great climber, you know, really good guy, and, well, that cycling is close.
Well, that sums up some of the chaos of today. We were in different places, weren't we? We heard there from fans, from, well, Francois, you had a bit of a ringside seat, what was going on at Groupama FDJ, because as you say, Lionel, that was the other big story today, and I was following that, obviously, from the car that I was in before I got in my helicopter for a little bird's eye view of the tour today. But Francois, I mean, very poignant scenes, obviously, around Groupama FDJ. You spoke to Philippe Mauduy as well.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I spoke to Philippe Mauduy, who was actually the sports director who stopped by Thibaut Pinot, took him in the car, and spent like, you know, 2 or 3 hours trying to, well, talk to him, trying to, you know. Well, as he said, you'll hear it in the interview, you know, he had his head on his shoulder, and I mean, it was like a small kid, you know, whose dream has been shattered, and yeah, it was quite a poignant interview, and as you'll hear in my, because I kind of recorded my, you know, myself there at the hotel, well, kind of extraordinary scene, happened to me. I mean, you know, there are moments in your coverage of the tour. There might not be the great moments, the victories, the defeats, but there are moving moments when chance puts you in somewhere. And I happened to find myself absolutely by chance in you know, I pressed the button of the lift at the team hotel of Groupama FDJ, and who was in the lift? You know, Thibaut Pinot in tears, and it was. I mean, I'm not a geek, so I didn't take a picture. It's not an Instagram, but it's not, stuck there, yeah. in my mind, and it'll remain one of the great, you know, moving moments and images I've had for covering the tour for 35 years.
Well, as I say, you spoke to Philippe Mauduy. Let's hear from him now.
A few words in English with Philippe Mauduy. We're at the team hotel, and at the end of a very strange day and a sad day. What's the feeling, Philippe?
It's a bad day. It's really a bad day, and really strange with the end of the race. So yeah, it was a dark cloud on top of the tour, and
Yeah.
The decision to stop the stage today, do you think was the only thing to do?
I don't know, actually. I was not in anymore, you know. I was with a boy on my shoulders and it happened what happens. I was not really looking for anything from the race. Yeah.
That was Philippe Modouy. We're just seeing on a screen here the moment where Pino climbed in the car. William Bonnet had been riding with him and put his arm around him and gave him a kiss, and he went. Marc Madiot says, "We're going to surround him with affection and sympathy. The team will be around to show him that we love him. He doesn't deserve this." Nevertheless, I mean, Pino's body has given up on him in the last 24 hours, 48 hours of the race, as it did at the Giro last year when he was heading for the podium and he fell very seriously ill. And
at the Tour in 2017 when he abandoned in the final week. I mean, he's got a real weak spot deep in the third week.
And
hasn't
these are all different events. And the leg injury today, well, we can see him now walking down the stairs and he looks in a lot of pain. It's
hard luck because
it's terrible.
You can't say... Until this Tour, we could say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't last 3 weeks or it's fragile. But this probably... Nobody actually knows what happened and how he got injured. And as you heard Philippe Modouy said, it doesn't matter, you know. But in the same time, it's... apparently, it was in the Nîmes to Gap stage when the Pont du Gard to Gap stage when there was a crash on top just ahead of the FDJ team, and to avoid the crash, he kind of, you know, his knee hit the handlebars, so he had nothing to do with his form, nothing to do with his mental strength. It was just hard luck, and that's part of the Tour.
What about the Movistar classification, Lionel? We're watching the highlights from today. I didn't hear that in your tale of the etap.
I mean, it's just so... I mean, it's so opaque, the Movistar classification.
Three riders in the top nine.
One of the riders in the Movistar classification is riding for next year's Arkea Samsic team. So how do we analyse that, really?
Well...
But I mean, let's have a word for, the fact that the GC is not done and dusted, is it? But... Bernal is in a very, very strong position going into another difficult stage, but another difficult stage where the weather forecast isn't great. I don't think it will be as bad as it was today, but no one was predicting golf ball style or golf ball
tennis ball
hailstones today.
Just a little update on what I was saying earlier. I asked Seb Piquet exactly what happened today and how the decision was made. So reports came from ahead, obviously, because they were the chief commissar and Thierry Gouvin, who are in the car with Seb Piquet following the race. So where they were, the weather was benign. There was nothing to suggest it was going to turn as it did. People ahead on the course in cars, not commissars, but other people who are driving the race.
Yeah,
officials.
They have a number of cars
scattered ahead.
Ahead.
They reported back, and so they knew 3 kilometers from the summit about the weather, and that's when the decision was made. So they had 3 kilometers before the summit to make a decision, and the decision was made pretty quickly, well before obviously reached the top, and the decision was also made then to take times at the summit. So that's what happened. The news was relayed back to the car, and Gouvenu and the chief commissar made the decision. So yeah, I mean. Well, we're watching now. I mean, we're watching on TV here, Bernal. And some of this we've not seen because it was so difficult really to follow what was happening today. But back to Pino. I mean, even this morning I was thinking Pino could still win this Tour de France, and his chance is gone, extinguished so quickly and so early in the stage. I was by the side of the road about 40 kilometres into the stage, and it was a really frantic, fast start to the stage as well. And what struck me from my vantage point there was that, once again, Ineos were scattered. You know, they were not in their usual position of packing the front. Kwiatkowski was well back. Dylan van Baarle was well back at that point, though. I think he got further back.
Yeah, but Wout Poels, for once, I mean, was great. Did a great job. Really attacked led the way when it mattered, and when he was actually, you know, he had finished his job as the gregario. I know your listeners love this word. He found himself in the Alaphilippe group, and he was with Alaphilippe, and then attacked just to prove that, you know, the kind of mental blow, you know, to Alaphilippe, telling him, look, I'm only your, you know, your opponent's teammates, domestique, and look, you know, I'm dropping you on the climb. It was so actually today, I think the team Ineos of old were back. They had really prepared for that day. It should have been, in my opinion, even more successful. My take on it. I know that's speculation, but I mean, I've covered the tour long, and the way Bernal had gone, I'm sure he would have reached the with a 3-4 minute lead on the rest, and the tour would have. I mean, tomorrow wouldn't have mattered at all.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the way he was riding in the final few kilometres of the Iseran was a tour winning move, wasn't it? And he probably would have gone and gained more time. Well, he was gaining time on the Iseran for a start. So, I think that may have. Well, in the final kind of analysis of the decision that was made, that was the correct decision, because the best rider today is in the yellow jersey. And, tomorrow, if they want to unseat him, they have their shot still, because the time gaps are still pretty small. But I would have to say you'd be betting on Bernal winning the Tour from here.
A quick, maybe just a quick Gallic minute. Only yesterday at the start, and maybe today even at the start, I had all these my foreign colleagues coming to me asking me to write columns or answer to interviews about that day, that we'd been waiting for so long, for a Frenchman in a position to win the Tour de France, and look at where we are tonight. There might not be, and I think there won't be, any Frenchman on the podium in the Champs-Élysées.
You changed out. It by giving all these interviews to the BBC, Francois.
Pino is out. Julien Alaphilippe, if the stage, there's a 34-kilometer climb tomorrow, so Julien Alaphilippe might not be in the podium, and I think he won't be on the podium tomorrow. And if it's and it will be decisive stage tomorrow, and with lots of points awarded in the last climb, Romain Bardet will not be in the polka dot jersey either. So what might have been the great return of French cycling, and that tour that the French have been waiting for so long, well, not this year.
The French Tour de France has melted like a giant hailstone in the sun.
The good news is that great. Francois won't be retiring just yet.
Well, that's the upside.
The cycling podcast at the 2019 Tour de France is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code Lionel.
SISCP25.
You weren't really in character. You only went in character halfway through that. I think you have to do it again.
You sounded like a frozen robot.
Well, someone switch him off and switch him on again.
Oh, I wish that was possible. SISCP25.
Excellent. I like how you do the hand movements as well. That's fantastic.
Maybe we should video the hand movements on the Champs-Élysées and put that out on Twitter.
Definitely. And also remind you can enter the fantastic Science and Sport competition to win a day in the Team Ineos team car, either the Tour of Britain or the Vuelta. Simply go to sciencesport.com/sign-up. And enter that competition with loads of amazing runners-up prizes as well. So do that, and thank you once again to Science and Sport. Any other odds and ends from today's? Well, this is one of these stages, isn't it, that you can't do it justice in half an hour, whatever, however long this podcast will be. It's a stage that we'll be going back and unpicking and reanalyzing for years.
You'll write a book about it, Richard, I'm sure.
I probably will, yeah. Just call it Stage 19. That's not a bad idea,
actually.
Available
in all good bookshops eventually.
Eventually, yeah. But I'm curious to... I'm just scrolling down the results here to see where William Bonnet finished, because... he was one of the heroes of today, I think, the way that he looked after. He is like a bodyguard, isn't he? He's a big, big old unit, broad shoulders. Had a terrible crash himself a few years ago, didn't he?
Absolutely
on the stage
terrible.
To the Mur de Huy. Yeah. hit a lamppost or something.
Yeah, there was very serious concern that he might, you know, stay in a wheelchair all his life. And I mean, I wouldn't say he was lucky, but yeah, he managed to get back on a bike and be a professional rider. So, well, he knows what kind of agony actually, cycling can provide.
He didn't finish today either. Sorry, I didn't realize that until I just looked it up. He didn't finish, but I'm not that surprised because he waited a long time with Pino to try and help him, and very, very moving scenes when it came the moment for Pino to retire. And God, yeah, an emotional day, and that's, you know, Pino, the Pino story is emotional, the Alaphilippe story is emotional. Seeing the people here who'd been waiting for hours to watch the tour pass, never got to see the tour pass, and then the guy in the yellow jersey is driven past them, and he stops and, you know, gets out the sun. I mean, well, and also for them, that was a great moment and a great sort of little glimpse into his character as well.
Well, also, the last time the tour came to Team was 2007, 12 mm-hmm. years ago. So, you know, their big day. And as we heard, you know, the atmosphere up there was quite surreal. And even at sort of 6 o'clock, 6:30, I saw a couple of the Bora Hansgrohe riders kind of just riding through the town looking for their team hotel, not quite sure what had happened to them, but clearly they'd made their own way up, because everybody came up just however they could. Earlier on in the afternoon, I had a quick chat with a Katusha bus driver saying, would you go down to collect the riders to bring them up? And he said, well, I'm not sure I can get down to go and do so. And so, and not all of the buses have made it up before the stage was cancelled. So it was a real surreal kind of reminder that the Tour de France is, you know, when it goes like clockwork every day.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the truly astonishing thing about it. When we drive around in our little Tour de France bubble and we follow the signs and we get into the car park and the fans are there and we're here and, you know, there's a sort of a dotted line that divides the people in the race and the people from out of the race and everything goes well, you just take it so much for granted. When you see what happened today, you realise how well organised the thing is, because everything was okay. You know, it wasn't perfect for the race or the result or whatever, but, you know, the right decision was made with regard to the safety of the riders. You know, everything kind of was sorted out so that the teams could all get to where they needed to get to. Even coming off the mountain wasn't too bad. And it just puts you in awe of the scale and the organisation of the event itself, I think.
There were messages coming through, you know, about the makeshift arrangements for the riders to go and shelter. I had visions of them in a kind of church hall or scout hut, you know, with polystyrene cups of coffee and biscuits. And it sounded kind of like that from Simon's report, that, you know, they did well to make sure the riders were safe as well, because the weather just ahead of them was dangerous, you know, and I'm sure for a lot of the fans caught in that, it was dangerous too, and hopefully everyone's okay. But the ensuring the safety of 170 odd riders was quite a logistical operation, and they seem to have done it with great efficiency.
Should I say, I mean, I don't want to be ought to sound ominous, but the weather forecast for tomorrow is even worse.
Well, it's improved a little bit this afternoon.
But I mean, it also improved, you know, for today. So, I mean, you know, we can forecast, that there might be nothing, and there might be even worse weather tomorrow with more storms, you know. And we're going very, very high in altitude to Val Thorens. Hopefully, we'll have a full stage and a great battle.
Well, Francois speculating here about what will happen with weather tomorrow. But as we already know from Lionel's stop press at the end of the tail of the etap, tomorrow's stage has already been changed. So I refer you to Lionel's stop press at the end of the tail of the etap. It's 59 kilometres tomorrow. One climb.
Well, it wasn't just the Tour that had trouble today, because the Italian stage race Adriatica Ionica was also hit by hailstones, and well, we saw some film of riders sheltering under bus stops and sheltering in bushes and under trees as sort of, again, golf ball size.
Francois is just gone, Lionel.
I mean, we've been gazumped here.
He's gone to do another BBC interview about how a Frenchman might not win the Tour de France.
Well, we should wrap up, Richard, because tonight...
Let's wrap up. We've got a bit of a journey, haven't we?
We have. We're staying with a very good friend of the podcast, Simon Lund, who put us up after Geraint Thomas won the stage at La Rosière last year and took the yellow jersey for Team Sky, and we were very grateful to his invitation. So, when the race route was announced to be going close by his house again, we were surprised and delighted that he offered the invitation again. So, well, Simon Gill is there already, I think.
Oh, really?
I think so. And we need to get over the mountain. We need to go.
Let's go. Before we go, finally, I mentioned last night that we're doing a November tour, and three of those events tickets have gone on sale. At Cardiff on the 12th of November, Belfast on the 15th of November, and Leicester on the 28th of November. I also can tonight announce that we're doing two events at the Arts Theatre in London on the 18th and the 25th of November, and also in Manchester at the Royal Northern College of Music on the 30th of November. And all those tickets are now available. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com, click the tab Live Events, and go and buy your tickets. And we look forward to seeing as many of you there as possible. Now, let's do our thanks to some friends of the podcast. Thank you very much to James Sells, Daniel Ruff, Richard Jones, Alistair Fowler, Julian Jones, Julian Thornley, Alistair Lovett, Joe Radford.
And thank you to John Mason, Nicola Beely, Murray Peebles, Jacqueline Hill, Brian Orrell, Joshua McIntosh, Cameron Yorston, and Emil Holt.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. Where's Francois?
A thank you in absentia to Francois.
Blimey.
Thanks, Francois.
Gazump by the BBC.